All right, thanks, Eric. We, as Eric mentioned, we are still studying about the apostles, and we are going to make some progress this morning. We've pretty much just been able to cover one apostle a week, but now we're getting into some apostles that we know a little less about. And last week we talked about James, whose father was Zebedee, but we also know that there was one other apostle named James. He's identified as James, the son of Alphaeus. So let's just kind of jump right into this. What do we know about James, the son of Alphaeus? There you go. That's it. we know almost nothing about James, the son of Alphaeus. So it's going to feel a little anticlimactic that this is who we're going to start with today. Definitively, we know that James is mentioned four times in the New Testament. And each time is when he's mentioned in the listing of the other apostles. Matthew 10, Mark 3, Luke 6, and Acts 1. Where all of the apostles are listed, James the son of Alphaeus is listed. Beyond that, we know nothing about James the son of Alphaeus. Now, there's some who look at James who's in Jerusalem in the middle to end of Acts, as that's possibly James, the son of Alphaeus. I think that when we look at what Paul writes in Galatians, we get the idea that that's probably not James, the son of Alphaeus, and more likely that's James, Jesus' brother. Some folks will look at... Well, you know, let's just do this. Let's look at... we looked at this verse last week, 2 weeks ago, but let's look at Mark chapter 15. In Mark chapter 15, verse 40, we have this account of the women who are around the cross of Jesus. And there it says, "There were also women looking on from afar, among whom were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the Less, and Joseph, and Simone." So here we have mention of a man by the name of James the Less. He's mentioned one other time, same context, Jesus around the cross. So many people will associate James the son of Alphaeus with James the Less. And here's the thing, there's just no biblical support for that. There is some logic behind why people would think that James the son of Alphaeus is this James the Less. You know, there are two James who are apostles. James, the son of Zebedee, he was the first. He was one of the first two followers of Jesus. He was one of the apostles that was in that inner circle of Jesus. And so James, the son of Zebedee, was, we might say, more significant than James, the son of Alphaeus. And so some folks would maybe make that connection to this is why James, the son of Alphaeus, is called James the Less. But the reason that most folks think that James, the son of Alphaeus, is James the Less is because of a writing by the name of Jerome. He identifies James, the son of Alphaeus, with James the Less. There's a couple of issues here. First of all, this is written around 400. And so, you know, we're talking 350 years after the events actually happened. The writing in which Jerome identifies James, the son of Alphaeus, with James the Less, the title of that work is called The Perpetual Virginity of the Blessed Mary. All right, so now we're already got our ears up that here this man, Jerome, is writing an art. He's writing in response to another individual who said that Mary was not a perpetual virgin. Apparently, this was a conversation happening around 400. And so Jerome writes this letter, article, whatever it was at the time, basically arguing that Mary was a perpetual virgin. He also argues that Joseph wasn't really the husband of Mary, and that the brothers of Jesus are actually his cousins and not his real brothers. So we have sort of all of these issues with this writing of Jerome, and it's from that writing that we get this idea that James the Less is James the son of Alphaeus. And does that mean that he's not? No, but at least the basis for why people believe that is something that we should be suspicious of. So, That's James, the son of Alphaeus. We know basically nothing about him. I don't believe that he's James the Less, but if you do, I don't know that I could tell you that he's not. There is some interesting earlier writings that may give us an idea of what may have happened to James. There was a man by the name of Hippolytus of Rome who lived between 170 and 235, so about 100 years after James. He wrote that James, the son of Alphaeus, was preaching in Jerusalem when he was stoned by the Jews, and he was buried there somewhere in Jerusalem. So I don't know how credible that is. It's 100 years later. I mean, I suppose it could be. But that's it. That's all we know of James. Any other comments on James, the son of Alphaeus? I told you we were going to make some progress. All right, so let's talk about two other apostles that we know a little bit more about. Let's look at Philip. Philip is an interesting apostle in that we know Philip from Matthew, Mark, and Luke in that he's mentioned in the listing of the apostles in those books. But everything else we know, really everything we know about Philip, is found in the book of John. So if we only had the synoptic gospels, we would know the same about Philip as we did about James, the son of Alphaeus. Just that he existed, that he was an apostle. Now certainly James, the son of Alphaeus, was a significant man. I mean, he was an apostle. We certainly know that he would have done the same kinds of things that the other apostles did. We just don't know. We don't have any of those recording. And if it weren't for John, we'd be saying the same thing about Philip. But in John, we're told a couple of events that involve Philip. So let's go to John chapter 1. If someone would, you know what, I think we're going to get through both of these. So let's look at John 1. Someone read, starting in verse 43, and read to the end of the chapter. John 1, 43 through 51.
Now Philip was in Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." And Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Philip said to him, "Come and see." Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him and said to him, "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom is no deceit." Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me?" Jesus answered and said to him, "Before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you." Nathanael answered and said to him, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus answered and said to him, "Because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You will see greater things than these." And he said to him, "Most assuredly I say to you, hereafter you shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man."
All right, thanks, James. All right, so here we have the account of Jesus calling Philip. So after having looked at this, what is it that we know about Philip? All right, so we know what town he's from, right? He's from Bethsaida, same town as Peter and Andrew. Does Philip know Peter and Andrew? I don't know. We don't get the idea that any of these towns are very big, and so it's possible that Philip knew Peter and Andrew before Jesus called him. It's possible that he didn't. We just don't know. But we know what town he's from. He's from Bethsaida. Okay, what else do we know?
That he knows Nathan before.
That's right. He knows Nathanael. Yep. And we're going to, and by the way, this is the only place where that individual is called by that name. Who remembers what his other name is that we know him by?
Bartholomew,
that's right. So this is Bartholomew, and so the next apostle we're going to talk about after this is Bartholomew. So he knows this guy, Bartholomew, Nathanael. Okay? What's interesting is they appear to be friends, And Philip wants Bartholomew to know about Jesus. He goes and Jesus calls Philip, and Philip then goes and finds Bartholomew and says, "Hey, we found him." Just like Andrew did to go find his brother Peter. So, very similar story. One other thing that I think is interesting here is notice what Philip says in verse 45 when he goes and finds Bartholomew or Nathanael. He says, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Philip had a knowledge of the Bible, of the Scriptures. He knew the old law, he knew the prophets, he knew those prophecies about Jesus, and he uses that as the means by which to tell Nathanael, "Hey, we have found Jesus." So that's Philip's calling. Any other comments on that? It's interesting how similar Philip and Andrew are. We're going to get into another story where we've kind of talked about this story once, but Philip and Andrew work together, but their lives are very similar. Andrew, of course, we know a little bit more about, but what we know about Philip, his life is very similar to Andrew. Andrew gets called, Andrew goes and finds Peter, his brother, and says, "Come on, we found Jesus." Philip gets called. He goes and finds Bartholomew, his friend. At least we don't have any indication that they're relation. And they, he says, "We found Jesus." Bob,
do you know a specific place where he might be referring to this prophet, Moses in the law, prophets, where he says Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph?
Yeah, I don't. I think he's talking in general. I don't think that anything there is a specific. Yeah.
Memory. I don't remember ever reading anything about Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph.
Yeah.
In the law.
I think he's just identifying who he was.
Okay.
You know, we've found him who the prophets talked about, and that person is Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. I mean, we know that there's. There are several men in this time frame who have the name Jesus. There very well may have been other men whose name is Jesus, whose father is Joseph. Those appear to be somewhat common names. Joseph in particular. Eddie?
Do you suppose that in this time they were worshiping in the different synagogues that were in different places? And they were studying the law and the prophets?
Oh, yeah.
This is where it all starts from?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, we know that Jesus frequented the synagogues. It was his custom, so it sounds like it's something he had been doing for a long time. The apostles likely did the same thing. Many of the apostles we know were followers of John. We don't know if Philip was a follower of John or not, but Philip certainly could have learned about the law and the prophets and the prophecies about Jesus through worship in the synagogue. Certainly could have happened. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Maybe that's what our answer should be when somebody, is arguing about a point. Let's just
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to get a pretty clear picture that Philip and Bartholomew were friends and maybe even close friends. And in that kind of a relationship, you know what makes the other person tick, don't you? And so, Philip was interested in making sure that Bartholomew followed after Jesus as well. And when Bartholomew gives this sort of, cynical answer, Philip doesn't engage him, just says, "Hey, Cole, come on. Good point. Okay, we're going to come back to this story when we talk about Nathanael, because that's sort of the interesting part of the story. Let's go on to John chapter 6. It's another passage where we have Philip mentioned. I think there's probably less of a here for us to learn about Philip than our previous story. But John 6, somebody read the first seven verses for us.
After these things, great multitude followed him because they saw his signs which he performed on those who were diseased. And Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. Now the Passover feast of Jesus was near. And Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" This he said to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish, but where are they among so many?" And Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in the number about 5,000.
All right, that's probably good enough. Because Philip's out of the story at this point. But we know how this ends, right? Jesus takes the food from the boy, divides it up, and they end up with a whole bunch of leftovers. And so Philip has an interesting role in this in this series of events. So Jesus goes up on a hill, on a mountain, and he sees all the people following after him because he had performed miracles, he had fed people. I mean, you know, just they're following after him. And so Jesus says to Philip, not to the apostles in general, he seems to have picked out Philip here and says, "Where are we going to buy bread that all of these people should eat?" And
it's kind of interesting to note that you look here in the 6th chapter and then the 12th chapter and other places, Philip's name, you may already have this, there's the first four, Peter was usually the first of the first four. Mm-hmm. The second four, it was Philip that headed that group. And he seems to be kind of a go-getter guy, the go-to guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like Andrew seems to be this intermediary, right, between people and Jesus, where Andrew goes and gets people and brings them to Jesus, Philip, in some ways, does very much the same thing, right? We're going to talk about, you mentioned John 12, but that's the next passage where it's pretty clear that that's what's happening. But here, this is somewhat of the same thing. Here's Philip between these people and Jesus. I find it interesting that Jesus isolates out Philip, and the question that Jesus asks him is about money. Now, at this point, we're speculating. I don't know what to make of this, but who do we know carried the money for the apostles? Judas carried the money for the apostles. Now, why didn't Jesus ask Judas about the money? But it's interesting that Philip knows the answer. Philip knows how much money they have, right? Philip says, "We've got 200 denarii," or at least it appears as that's what they have, because he says 200 denarii is not enough that everyone would have just a little bit. So it seems like Philip knows how much money the apostles have collectively. Is that because Philip was the check and balance? Well, probably not, because we know that Judas took money. So I don't know. I just...
And Jesus talks specifically to him because he knows there's no way they have enough money to take care of everybody, which makes the miracle that Jesus performs that much greater.
Yeah.
And it would speak specifically to Philip.
Yeah. The truth is, we don't really know. The next question I've had is, why did he ask Philip? Well, it's a test, but why Philip? And then that's the end of it, because I don't know the answer. And that's a good enough answer as anything I could have come up with.
You know, just some of the things that have been already mentioned. Philip seems like a really person that really cares about people. And so it's been logical that Philip may have been running this through his head. Where's all these people going? How are they going to eat? Mm. This is kind of a crazy situation. And he's maybe thinking ahead, you know. And Jesus...
Yeah. Yeah, Jesus... Jesus knows people's thoughts, so yeah, maybe that's what's going on here.
It's a lot like the incident with Mary and Martha when Jesus came to the house.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting. All right, any other comments about that?
At this point in John, not all the disciples have enlisted, the apostles have enlisted, so it might be that Judas was not yet.
Yeah, It's possible Judas isn't there, and maybe Philip is the one carrying the money at this point. You know, it's interesting. Did all of the apostles always follow Jesus, or did they come and go? I don't know the answer to that. We know that there were times when Jesus separated some of the apostles off. We know Peter had a family. Maybe he didn't know. I don't know. I don't know if they're always with them or not.
Where did they get their money? Is this so their family money, the money that they have when they left their jobs, the people donate to them? I don't know how much. 200
denarii,
I'm not sure how much.
Well, a denarii is about a day's wage, I think, is the way to look at that. So, I mean, you know, it's not an insignificant amount of money, but it's not enough money to feed 5,000 people even just a little bit of bread.
It's been suggested that Mary Magdalene, I think she may have been more of a wealthy lady, possibly contributed quite a bit. The women, let me just say, yeah. A group of women in Jerusalem contributed quite a bit to their money situation.
Yeah. Of course, they could have just gone fishing and Jesus said, hey, we need some more money. Go grab some fish. There'll be some money in it. Because we know that happened at least once. I don't know where their money came from. All right, let's look at John 12. Dwayne already mentioned it. We've looked at this passage once before because this has Andrew in it. So in John chapter 12, beginning in verse 20, I'll just read the first couple of verses there. Now there were certain Greeks amongst those who came up to worship at the feast. Then they came to Philip, whom was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and asked him, saying, Sir, we wish to see Jesus. Philip came and told Andrew, and in turn Andrew and Philip told Jesus. And the story goes on. We kind of already talked about this a little bit before. Why is it that Philip doesn't just go directly to Jesus? Why does Philip go to Andrew, and then Andrew and Philip together go to Jesus? Well, maybe we kind of talked a little bit about this. Maybe Andrew had a much closer relationship with Jesus than Philip did. We know that there were different relationships with Jesus amongst the apostles. Maybe Andrew had a better relationship with Jesus. Maybe Philip just wanted someone else to go with him. You and I have probably always been in those situations. You have someone who's made a request of you that needs to be made to someone else, and you just don't want to go alone, and you go find somebody to go with you. I mean, we can sort of envision that scenario. I think when we talked about this before, it may have been Tad had mentioned that Philip is a Greek name, and so maybe I get the idea these are Greek-speaking Jews, like we see in Acts, but maybe they just felt more comfortable going to Philip, and that's why they went to Philip, and Philip felt, again, better about taking Andrew with him. I don't know, but it's interesting that both Philip and Andrew appear to have very similar traits, and that is that they want to bring people to Jesus, and this is a good example of that. Other comments on this. There really isn't a whole lot there other than we see Philip doing the same thing he's done before, and that is being an intermediary between Jesus and another person.
To Bob's point, if he truly cares about people, and we know he truly cared about Jesus, Jesus had already told them that he was going to die, or you know, maybe not in that exact way, but so he may have been concerned about bringing these Greeks to Jesus, thinking that maybe they wanted to hurt him.
Mm.
So he goes to Andrew, and then Andrew's like, oh, it's okay, let's go.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's skip ahead to John 14, unless there's other comments. I bet you didn't know we had so much information about Philip. I didn't. I'm like, Philip, what do we know about Philip? I think we know very little about Philip. But we see Philip in the book of John at least four times, and this is the fourth time. Okay, John chapter 14. Somebody read verse 7 through 11.
Show us the Father. Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father in me? The
The words that I speak to you, I do not speak on my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does the works. Believe me that I am in the Father, and the Father in me, or else believe me for the sake of the works themselves.
All right. So here we have Jesus talking about his oneness, his unity with the Father. And so there in verse 7, he says, if you've known me, you've known the Father also. So Jesus basically says, I'm one with the Father. And then Philip, I don't know if there's more conversation happening here, but then Philip says, show us the Father. It's like he just totally missed the point. What was Philip really asking for there? Did he really literally want to see God the Father?
I think he was saying, Jesus, we're getting to really get to know you and really feel very close to your connection with heaven. Now we'd like to see the Father.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like he's not really saying, I want to see God. I get the idea. He says, I want to know God the Father. I want to understand God the Father. That's sort of the picture I get here.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a great question. It's not a great question after Jesus says, "If you know me, you know the Father," right? But it's still we should be asking this same question too. But Jesus is trying to tell them, if you knew me, if you've known me, then you're going to know the Father. And why is that? Because Jesus was with the Father, was representative of the Father. Mike?
You remember the verse that said, Jesus spoke as no man had ever spoken before. The things that he said were not natural. Well, and things like this, you could tell somebody that, but they just couldn't understand it. It took a long time for those things to sink in.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually that's my very next question is, why didn't Philip understand? I mean, we read verse 7, and then when we read verse 8 and see Philip's question, we're like, Philip, why are you asking that question? Jesus just said, if you know me, you know the Father. And he asked this question.
Verse 6 is a little bit different. I would argue he would have asked the same question. Verse 6, Jesus says that, I'm the way to the Father. You don't go to the Father unless you come through me. And so me, logically, I would say, well, I'd like to see the Father, and you just said that you can take me to Him, then let's do it.
Yeah, good point.
I think we sometimes don't put ourselves back in the place of the apostle. We have it all right here in front
of us. That's right. We have the benefit of hindsight, don't we? Yeah, that's right. Okay. So now we're going to fast forward to Acts chapter 6. In Acts chapter 6, verse 5, we have the appointment of deacons. Now, why would I go to Acts chapter 6 and verse 5 and talk about deacons? All right. So, in chapter 6, verse 5, it says, and the saying pleased the whole multitude, and they chose Stephen, a man full of faith in the Holy Spirit, and Philip, Prochorus, Nicanor, Timon, Parmenius, and Nicholas, a proselyte from Antioch. All right, so here's these six men who were selected. We say that they're not called deacons here. They do the work of the deacons. If they're not deacons, I don't know what they are. So here are these six men who were picked to be deacons, and one of the men is Philip. So is it possible that this Philip is Philip the apostle? Well, could an apostle also be a deacon? Well, Peter, we know, was an elder, or was an apostle, but is also called later in life an elder. This guy, Eusebius, who writes in 260 to 340, so around 300, in his writings, he seems to think that Philip, there's only one Philip in the whole Bible, and that's Philip the apostle. But this guy's writing a few hundred years later, Mike.
If it was the same Philip, I'm not saying it wasn't, but if it was, then they're defeating the very purpose that they elect.
All right, that's the answer here. So let's look at
Verse 6 is the answer, really.
I thought
did he lay his hands on himself?
Oh, well, actually, I think there's a better answer in verses 2 through 4. But you're right. We're all on the same line. Verse 2 through 4. Then the 12 summoned the multitude. Okay, so it says 12. So, right, this is the 12, which would be the original 11 plus Matthias. Then the 12 summoned the multitude of the disciples and said, "It is not desirable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Therefore, brethren, seek out from among you seven men of good reputation, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business, but we will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the word." So, Philip, the apostle, is part of the 12. He's part of the we that says, we're not going to leave this business to take care of this business. Appoint seven men to take care of that. And it happens to be that one of those seven men, his name is also Philip. We go to verse 6, it's the same issue. They lay hands on him. Does Philip lay his hands? So it's not that the apostle could not be a deacon. It's that in this situation, the whole reason why the apostles selected these or had these seven men selected was so that they could focus on other things. So Eusebius is wrong. And I think it's important for us to point out that every time we mention some of these early church writers, they can be and very may often be wrong. And this is an example of that. That Eusebius thought there was just one Philip, and it's clearly he's wrong because there are two Philips. Philip the apostle, and then this Philip here, who we know to be a deacon. So now, let's fast forward to Acts chapter 8. We see Philip again. Which Philip, right? So this is the problem. Yeah, so, well, hold on, Dwayne. That might be a different Philip. So in Acts chapter 8, we read of this miracles that are happening in Samaria. It's said to have happened at the hands of Philip. Later on in the chapter, in verses 26 through 40, we see Philip interacting with the Ethiopian eunuch. The work that's being done here by this man, Philip, appears to be the work that an apostle would do, right? Preaching, healing the sick, casting out demons, performing miracles. Could the apostles do that? Absolutely, the apostles could do that. So, could this be Philip the apostle? Could be. But someone read Acts chapter 8, verse 1.
Now Saul was consenting to his death at that time, and great persecution arose against the church, which was at Jerusalem, and they were all scattered throughout the region of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles.
That's right. If we didn't have verse 1, I think we would believe that the Philip in Acts chapter 8 is Philip the apostle. But because Luke records for us this first verse and is very specific and says there's this persecution that arose after Stephen's death and the church was scattered except who? The apostles. The apostles stayed in Jerusalem. So those who were scattered were not the apostles. So Philip the apostle would have stayed in Jerusalem. So then this Philip in Acts chapter 8 is Philip who was a deacon at the church in Jerusalem, but he leaves and he goes and makes his way to Samaria where he preaches there. He meets up with the Ethiopian eunuch. And then notice what becomes of Philip. Someone read verse 40, Acts 8 and 40.
Philip was found at Azotus, and passing through, he preached in all cities till he came to Caesarea.
All right, so this Philip, who is not Philip the Apostle, this is Philip the Deacon. He makes his way and he settles in Caesarea. Now, Dwayne, you said Philip the Evangelist. Now, why would you say that?
Yeah, because that's what he's doing. He's being an evangelist. So that, and a lot of the early commentators, the old commentators, believe it's Philip the Evangelist that baptized
the eunuch.
The eunuch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
I'm just wondering, can he be running off preaching all over the place and still be a deacon?
Yeah, so
Acts 21.
All right, Theta's there. Yeah. Go ahead and read Acts 21 and 8.
On the next day, we were Paul's companions, departed and came to Caesarea, and entered the house of Philip the evangelist, who was one of the seven, and stayed with him.
Okay. There you go. There's the answer. So, this is 20 years later. 20 years later, and we know this is Philip, the same Philip that's in Acts chapter 6, the same Philip that's in Acts chapter 8, Philip who was a deacon, because it says he's one of the seven, but now what is he? Now he's an evangelist. And he is in Caesarea, which makes sense, right? Because in Acts chapter 8, verse 40, he as he leaves Jerusalem, he meets up with the Ethiopian eunuch. He goes to Samaria, then he meets up with the Ethiopian eunuch, and he eventually settles in Caesarea. 20 years later, Paul meets up with him. He's now an evangelist working in Caesarea. So there are two Philips in the Bible, and that's pretty much it. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's actually another Philip in the Bible. King Herod's Herod the Great's son, his name is Philip. Remember he was part of the whole situation with John the Baptist being beheaded. So there's three Philips in the New Testament, but two that are part of the church. Philip the apostle and Philip the deacon and evangelist, or deacon at one point in time and then evangelist another point in time. Mike?
What may help explain this is that those seven were appointed before this great persecution arose, and against the church in Acts 8, and all this community, much of the church was gathered.
Yeah.
And maybe that's when, after that, when
Philip began, they banged up. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really clear explanation. All right. Some non-biblical information about Philip. There was a writing about the 4th century that seemed to indicate that Philip traveled with Bartholomew to Syria, Greece, and Phrygia, which is in modern Turkey, and seems to indicate that he died in a particular city, Hierapolis, which is in extreme western Turkey, either by crucifixion or beheading. Most people think that, or at least the tradition is that he was crucified. But the interesting point there is that the non-biblical writings in the 4th century put Philip the apostle working with Bartholomew. Bartholomew is who we're going to talk about next, but Philip and Bartholomew, they are not only friends, but they're partners. And we get that as a very clear image in the New Testament, but then also in writings in the 4th century. Okay, well, I was hoping to get through Bartholomew today, but we won't. We'll cover Bartholomew, and then I think we're going to go on to, I think it's Matthew and Thomas next week. So we'll try to finish up with Bartholomew and then jump into Matthew or Thomas after that. All right.